Last week saw the passing of the last commander of the old South African Defence Force, Constant Viljoen, passing away at the age of 86. And the reason why I thought I want to talk about this tonight, because his passing reminded me of a book published, I think it was 2 years ago, by a political journalist as well as political communicator, Dennis Kreyvagen, who wrote a book, Brothers in War and Peace, Abram and Constant Viljoen and the Birth of a New South Africa. Because what tends to happen is that at the passing, at the death of someone who was significant at the time of South Africa's transition from apartheid to a democracy, their legacies, their roles tend to be contested, tends to be controversial in many other cases, like Constant Viljoen. So that's why I thought I'd get Dennis on air to ask him just what role, whether good and bad, people have played in the transition of this country from an apartheid state to a democratic South Africa. Dennis joins us on the line. Firstly, Dennis, the Constant Viljoen, why the decision to write a book about the final commander of the old South African Defence Force? And fortunately, you wrote the book, because then I discovered that he had a twin brother whose life and career ran a totally different path to his.
Hi, Lester. Thank you. Yeah. Book was published in 2014. So, gosh, that's a long time ago.
It is a long time ago.
But at the time, we were all raving, particularly in after our first democratic elections, about the role Constant had played and how this warrior, this man who loved war, had become, let's call him a peace dove, for want of a better description. And as I got into the story and got to know people who were close to them, I realized that there was another unsung hero in our history, and that was his twin brother, Abraham, or Abram, as he preferred to be known. Some knew him as Bram, who really was, in a sense, given the times in which we live then, the black sheep of the family, because he was the one who, although born into an Afrikaner family, and although his brother was in the Bruderbond and head of the mightiest army in Africa, his politics was on the other side. He was a man on the left. He was one of the Afrikaner leaders who went to meet the ANC in the car in another century. And he played a pivotal role in that regard. But no one knew about this unassuming, quiet man who had lived in the shadow of his more illustrious brother. And as I searched out the story, I realized that this is a remarkable story, a South African story of Bruder Twist, as they say in Afrikaans, where the Viljoen family turned, Nazi turned against Abram because his politics was on the wrong side of Afrikaner politics generally. He knew that apartheid was wrong, but he wasn't a kind of last-minute convert to that philosophy, because of his conviction, his firm conviction that apartheid was wrong and unbiblical, he declined to become a Dominie in the NG Church, and he had studied to be a Dominie. So that set me on the road to this remarkable story and book.
Is Abram's legacy in direct contrast? It is in direct contrast to his twin brother, Constant. And in the last week, as we unpack the death and the legacy of Constant for you, I want to know you as a journalist who covered the 1994 election, who's currently involved in political communication at the moment. When we look at people's legacies and the roles that that they played, Constant Viljoen as the hawk, as the war hawk, who could, if he wanted to, as the head of the South African Defence Force, could, if he wanted to, gotten South Africa into a bloody civil war. But as the story goes, sat alongside Nelson Mandela at his Houghton home, Nelson Mandela managing to convince him, along with the help of his brother Abram, all of a sudden becomes a dove and decides to participate in the first democratic election of 1994. Should that at all be noted, welcomed, congratulated, turning a hawk into a dove, almost miraculously, or turning the hawk turning himself into a dove?
I think, Lester, we should never be blind to our legacy. Our legacy is not all good or all bad. Years ago, I was sitting in a class at Harvard University, and one of the lecturers told us the story of this despicable man. Was a scoundrel, and everything bad you could say about him. And we all sat there, and as he unrolled the story, we sort of moved back and back. And then he said, you know who this was? And we said, no. He said, Oscar Sindler. And he said, he warned us against judging people without looking at their entire lifespan. And I think that's what we need to do with someone like Constant. In fact, with all of us. Constant, even though he was at the head of the Defense Force at the time, told his political masters that there was no way in which apartheid could survive. The army could keep the government in power for only so long, and he urged them for years to start negotiating with the ANC. When he was head of the Afrikaner right wing after he had retired from the Defense Force, there were those in his ranks, himself included, who wanted to go to war and stop the elections. But Mandela told him the truth, you know, in his uniquely Mandela way, and by saying to him, you can't kill all of us. You can't kill all the black people in this country. The world will not allow it.
I may be paraphrasing incorrectly, but it went something to the effect of you may annihilate us, you and the South African Defence Force, but you'll never get rid of all of us. So you are indeed in this catch 22.
Indeed, and then he took one would say an honourable way out, or one would say he was very pragmatic and realised even if he could destabilise the 94 elections. Eventually, he would be vanquished. But at that stage, as a military, the military force that he commanded, which was outside, it was a non-statutory force, so it was not the army. It was comprised of at least 50,000 men and women, highly trained, all coming off the South African Defence Force. And if you looked at what they would have opposed if they had gone to war, there would have been a South African Defence Force which would have been torn between loyalties to the new government and the old government and a leader like Viljoen. And I reckon that in the end, Viljoen would have given a good account of himself in any battle, Viljoen and his people, because they knew sabotage and they'd proved themselves in battle. So I'm happy that he came in, and I think, yes, as he said when he gave evidence at the TRC, he said something like, why can't we agree that we all have dirty hands? We fought a war that should have been avoided that, from the start and should have been abandoned earlier. We fought a dirty war. So there he actually said his hands weren't clean. And yes, at the Battle of Kasinga, the TRC severely criticized him, former Defense Minister P.W. Botha and the former head of the South African Air Force, for their role in that. So that was an atrocity. And one should not forget that he also was the one who instructed Wouter Basson to start the research into the chemicals, South Africa's chemical warfare program.
But then we ask ourselves, Dennis, does someone like that, who admittedly said his hands are not clean, were they deserving of a place in a democratic parliament post-94? Or is that just the political compromise that was necessary at that time?
I'll answer it in two ways. Would we have had that political parliament in 94 if he hadn't come in? And the compromise, yes, we had to make compromises. And that was one of the compromises that was made. And I'm not unhappy that Mandela made that compromise. It was in the interest of South Africa. And sometimes a real test of leadership is to look ahead, you know, and to see 5 or 10 years ahead and say, what I'm doing right now might be against what I stood for, or what I've articulated before, but right now it's in the interest of the majority of South Africans. And I think that's the way Mandela and those close to him saw it.
Dennis, the story of Abraham and Constant Viljoen is incredibly cinematic. As you said, there was a political schism between the two of them. Did that only affect the political attitudes, or was there a real contestation between the brothers in their personal life as well?
Lester, it affected the entire Viljoen family. It also affected their personal life. Abraham was fond of saying how quite often people never knew that he was Constant's twin brother. Mm. I have spoken to people that it's recorded in the book who served on the border, what was then known as the border by white South Africa, was Constant, and wasn't aware that he had had a twin brother. A veteran of that era, Jan Breitenbach, commander of 32, the notorious 32 battalion, related to me how he had walked down one of Pretoria's roads one day, and he saw the general in civilian clothes approaching.
And they were identical twins, of course, yes.
Indeed. And he saluted, and the general said to him, "Actually, General, I can say bro."
Wow.
So it is that type of thing. After the Dakar meeting, Abraham said he had always tried to, in a sense, distance himself from Constant and what he had done. But on that particular day, when this group of Afrikaners arrived back in South Africa, there was a reception committee organized by the Afrikaner Weerstandsbeweging. And as they were shouting and getting angry and frotting at the mouth, Abraham passed them. And they sort of opened up so they could walk through, right, through this group. And he said he was never as happy as that day to really be confused with Constant. So, yes, a lot of people didn't know that they were twin brothers.
Dennis, very quickly, did they eventually, Constant and Abraham Viljoen, reconcile?
In the end, they reconciled. And when Constant went to Parliament as leader of the Freedom Front, Abraham worked in his office.
Dennis Kreyvagen, the author, political communicator, thanks so much for joining us.